to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. John, did you know that Vin Diesel only has two meals a day?
Hmm.
Yeah, he has Break Fast and Break Furious.
It's pretty good. It's
yeah,
pretty,
I feel like I could have delivered better.
What I like about it is that Vin Diesel might be the most unlikely Hollywood billionaire. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, is he a Hollywood billionaire? Did he do it?
He's up there. I don't know. He's a wealthy man. You know, you look at a Ryan Reynolds, you look at a Meryl Streep, you look at a even a Tom Cruise, and you think to yourself, I get it. You know?
Yeah.
You look at a Vin Diesel and you think, well, good for you.
Yeah, I really don't think he can easily earn as much as $50 million per year, depending on his film output. That's not really my first thought, but that is what CelebrityNetWorth.com says.
Oh, and they're very trustworthy. Thanks to them, I know your net worth.
Yeah, me too.
Wow, it's impressive. I hope you don't mind, I emailed them.
Can you do that? Can you be like, hey, here's my bank account?
I'm sure you can. I mean, all the people on the Forbes list do that. They asked, like, 1 year I was on the Forbes, like, best paid authors list, which I was like, I politely asked to be excluded from this conversation.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, because we're pretty sure you've made this much money. You made $3 million from Vlogbrothers. You made $4 million from the movie. And then you made $11 million selling books. And I was like, well, all those numbers are wrong. In the case of Vlogbrothers, wrong by $3 million.
So that's how they get the data, is they say, we're going to publish inaccurate information unless you send us accurate information.
Unless you send us accurate information. And then I was like, well, I don't want to send you accurate information because that's weird. It feels private to me. Uh-huh. And so they published an article where they said he makes $3 million a year from Vlogbrothers, $4 million a year from movies, and $11 million a year from selling books.
A year! Oh, man. I just want to hang a lantern. I've not finished soundproofing my new studio yet. So if it sounds a little more echoey than usual, that's why. But if it doesn't sound more echoey than usual, please let me know so that I can
stop soundproofing
my studio.
I love that you are in a soundproof studio and I'm just in my basement. Like, well, I'm watching Everton play Crystal Palace right now.
It's just a big empty room with a lot of ceiling and wall.
Yeah.
So I need to put some more baffles up, et cetera.
This is usually the part of the podcast where we talk about like how we're feeling and how we're doing and stuff. And I think we should skip that today. I think we should go straight to the questions from our listeners.
I was going to talk about Vin Diesel and how he's also one of the least likely Hollywood billionaires to only have two meals a day. Like, there's no way that's the case.
Two big meals, man. It doesn't matter how often you do it. It matters how much you do it.
Yes, exactly. John, so now that we've got Vin Diesel out of the way, I haven't looked at these questions at all, I'll be honest with you. Do you have any suggestions?
We're going
for us?
Through a little bit of a weird time, y'all, to be just in the interest of full disclosure. Do I have any what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Questions that you liked?
Oh no, Hank, I haven't looked at the questions. I've had maybe the busiest morning of my life.
And we appreciate you for it.
I'll tell you what, though. I did get back from Sierra Leone. I don't think I've talked to you since I got back from Sierra Leone. So let me talk about that for just a moment, if I can.
Yeah.
Sarah and I went to Sierra Leone to see the progress with the Maternal Center of Excellence, this hospital, this maternal and child hospital that's being built, funded primarily by Nerdfighteria, from people who subscribe to the Awesome Coffee Club, the Awesome Socks Club. We've got a new thing, Sun Basin Soap, which, I mean, Hank.
Yeah, people want soap. It's good soap. People bought soap.
It's not just that it's good soap. Like, it's the best soap I've ever used. Like, and I'm a fancy soap person. It is a game changer soap.
What's your flavor of choice? Do you have a favorite?
Well, okay. So I like Forrester, but I have an issue
with Forager.
But I have an issue with Forager that I've been meaning to bring up to you, which is that it's not great for the bath.
Oh, interesting. Because I'm not a bath person.
The exfoliants, while they are natural and totally biodegradable and lovely, They stick to the bathtub a little bit more than I would like. And they don't, so that's my only issue with Forager. It's great in the shower. It's become our number one go-to shower soap. So I mostly use the charcoal one, which is amazing.
Nice.
It's great. This soap thing is just, it's amazing. I think it has the potential to be a game changer because it is genuinely the best soap I've ever used. And all the profits go to charity. But anyway, what I was going to say is that thanks to all of that, plus the thousands of people who donate monthly at pih.org/Hank and John, the Maternal Center of Excellence is happening. You can watch a video on the Vlogbrothers YouTube channel about it, but the foundations are being poured. Walls are starting to go up. The rough plumbing and electricity and internet stuff is in. And oh my gosh, it's so exciting. It's huge. It is a 48,000 square foot complex that will finally, finally bring the kind of dignified, world-class healthcare that every delivering mother and newborn baby deserves. I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's really amazing. You being over there and texting me the whole time was very moving, and I really wished I was there with you. And it's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing what can be done when people work together really hard. And it is amazing how hard our community has been working to make this happen. And it's really wonderful to see it already having impacts. Yeah.
That's it. It is amazing to see what people can do when they come together. And in this case, when they come together across every continent, across all kinds of different backgrounds, across all kinds of cultural, social barriers, to express real, meaningful solidarity with the people of Kono, and then to see the way that the community has embraced the hospital, with 65% of the construction workers being women from Kono, with the whole community being excited every time there's a meeting to discuss the progress. All they want to hear is, can it go faster? I talked to so many people who were really excited, and one woman especially, who's a welder on the site, told me, you know, one day we will give birth here and we will bring our children here. And so this place matters to us so much. We want to make sure that it's built right and that it's built for generations. And it was just awesome. A very special trip, something I'll treasure in my memory as long as I've got memories.
John.
Yeah.
Do you want to answer a question from Hope?
Sure. It is my favorite of the major emotions.
Hope asks, "Dear Hank and John, I'm 23 and lucky to be comfortable in my life. I've got a good job and a great husband, but this comfort means I don't know what I'm working towards anymore. How do I find meaning in life when I'm not constantly aiming for a milestone or goal? Perching in your soul, Hope." Well, that's lovely.
That's great.
Isn't that a nice situation to be in? And isn't it the... really the situation that we are all in no matter what? I mean, I guess there's sort of like a, you know...
It's not the situation all of us are in all the time, but there are certainly a lot of times in a life when you may find yourself in that position, and it's a nice place to be, but your problems are still problems.
Yeah, but also I think that regardless of the problem landscape, there is always some amount of, why am I here? What is this for? What am I doing? And how do I figure that out?
Right.
And that, I mean, that's the question. It's a big human question, which I guess maybe we've always been asking it in one way or another, but we have codified that question in a lot of ways. And I feel like sometimes just call it philosophy. And I don't know. I think it's a tricky one.
Yeah. I mean, I have an opinion on it. You know, I think we're here to pay attention and to be together and to accompany each other through the trials and travails and joys of consciousness. I think we're here to make each other unalone and to observe, to pay attention. And for some people, that means like figuring out what keeps the stars apart. And for some people like me, it means trying to write about different human responses to trauma and why they're different. So that is a less important job than the astronomers have.
They're both, but they're both very important. Yeah.
But it's my job right now.
Yeah.
And so I think there's two things here. One is, if you don't feel like you have a job, you know, like you get a dog and the dog wants to work. The dog needs to have a sense of meaning in its life. Maybe the sense of meaning in the dog's life is that it is the companion to a very lovely child. And maybe the sense of the dog's meaning is that it is the squirrel chaser who ensures that the yard is free of squirrels. I think that we need to do that stuff, you know? And so maybe mm-hmm. it's about like, you don't feel like you're doing enough of that stuff. And so I would encourage you to explore doing a little bit of it, whether that's like, and sometimes it's as simple as breaking out of your routine. Like instead of going to the place you usually go with your husband in the evening, you go somewhere else and you're like, oh my God, those are stars. They are far away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the big things that we're here to do is appreciate.
What's that?
We're appreciators.
Hank is on a journey. Of meaning. He's on a journey of meaning. And he's on a journey of meaning. And he just said for the first time, we are here too. Which implies
we are here to
something.
Yeah. I think that I think that there's also like, what you are feeling is mm-hmm. the desire to try and find a good way to live a life, which is a thing mm-hmm. that you get to do. And that's, there's lots of people who think lots of ways about that. And there are going to be some ideas that resonate more and less with you, but I would suggest, you know, looking out for the kinds of people who talk about that. And also, I think that we are here to help. So,
here to help, here to accompany. Accompanying for me is like is like help, but it's specific. it's like help, but also tells you how to help.
Yeah,
which is not by like saying I'm here for you, but by like enacting I'm here with you. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you feel a growing or deeper connection to the great body of human souls who came before you, the 100 million people who aren't here now, but made here and now possible?
I mostly think about that not in terms of humans, but in terms, I don't really draw, like the big thing that has crested over me a lot lately is that the species lines are not clear.
Yeah.
And okay. The individual lines are not entirely clear once you get to a cellular level of things. Agreed. So I definitely feel a like sort of remarkable space occupying one piece of the, you know, 4 billion year history of life on Earth, which is very long. Like sometimes you get in like the cosmos stories or, you know, looking up at the galaxies, you get the sort of insignificance story, which is certainly there in terms of physical space. It's very hard to imagine us as significant, but in terms of amount of the universe, in terms of temporal space, life has existed on Earth for a substantial percentage of the lifetime of the universe.
Right.
And there's every indication as we continue to look that it could have happened earlier, but it couldn't have happened way earlier mm-hmm. because you need some stuff to happen in order for the ingredients necessary to exist.
Right.
And also, like, maybe it takes this long for this to happen. Maybe it takes 4 yeah. billion years of uninterrupted life
right.
for the, you know, the first the first person to the first like instance of the knowledge that you are on a planet or that stars exist
right.
or that galaxies exist yeah. or, you know, the first chair to exist, you know?
Yeah. Maybe the reason we haven't seen a lot of aliens is not because there won't be a lot, but because we're actually pretty early.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah, so that's, I definitely feel.
But do you feel a deep connection, a growing connection that you didn't feel maybe 3 years ago to that great endless ball of life that stretches back 4 billion years, which is millions of times longer than humans have been here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel, when you think about it, do you feel awe?
Yeah.
Do you feel an almost, if I can use some Latin, do you feel something akin to a mysterium tremendum, a feeling that there is this tremendous mystery that is both enchanting and awe-inspiring and wondrous, but also like a little terrifying in its largeness?
It's probably the same feeling.
Yeah.
But I would probably call it something else. And also, like, I don't really feel it unless I look for it.
You'd call it a non-mysterium tremendum.
Yeah. I mean, one of the great things about now is that so much of that stuff is still mysterious, mm-hmm. but known to be knowable, you know? Like, that mm-hmm. There is truth there, even if we cannot uncover all of it. You know, there is truth, like, the big...
I would argue that 95% of matter in the universe is probably known to be unknowable.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. I mean, that's the thing about dark matter and dark energy is that, like, we don't know what they are.
Yeah.
And we don't know if we can know them.
Yeah.
But we certainly don't think, we're certainly not acting as if we can't know them. We are... Like, the institution of science is actively trying to figure out what those things are. And there are many people who have ideas about what they are.
Okay.
And I've actually asked this question to a lot of astrophysicists. Do you think that we will someday know why the universe exists? And most of them do say no. They mostly say, no, I don't think it's possible to know why the universe started existing. Because ultimately, that is outside of observation. Like, you can't observe it because it happened before observable things.
Mysterium tremendum, man. The ultimate mysterium tremendum.
I think they're wrong.
Oh. Because Hank is coming in hard against the astrophysicist. Noted anti-intellectual Hank Green announces opposition to astrophysics as part of his journey to meaning.
I think that if you look... There are many times when that would have seemed to be the case. You know, the mm-hmm. idea that we would have known how the Earth was created,
mm-hmm.
you know, not mm-hmm. very long ago is just like mm-hmm. people would say, of course you can't figure out how the Earth was created. But now we know how the Earth was created. You know, we can watch as other planets are created. We can see it happen in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not going to be a light thing. We're not going to be able to see it with light, which is how astrophysicists and astronomers mostly understand the universe, is that they look at various kinds of radiation. So it's not going to be a radiation thing.
Yeah.
But it might be a math thing. It might, like, there's other ways to interrogate the universe. And so I think that, like, in some universe, I feel like humans will exist long enough to figure it out. But I don't know if it's this one, you know? So I'll just say it.
I think that you're religious.
Is that faith to you, that I think that humans can figure it out?
Yeah. No, it's not faith in the traditional sense. That's why I didn't say I think you're a man of faith. I think you're religious. It's a very specific, different thing. I think if you like spent an afternoon in a church, you would be like, well, that was interesting.
Oh, for sure.
I find it all
very interesting.
What if... This whole thing, I'm just spitballing here, Hank. What if this whole thing ends with you as a chaplain at a children's hospital?
John's trying to make up stories. He wants things to be a good story.
I love a symmetry. Uh-huh. You are a chaplain at a children's hospital pursuing your MDiv degree, uh-huh. having had... not really a blinding light spiritual awakening, but like a blinding light scientific awakening that was akin enough to a spiritual awakening that we can no longer really separate them. And I'd be in a tomato lab establishing doing tests on the tomatoes to make sure that they don't have any weird diseases.
Yeah, which is what I was doing at that time.
What if that's how it all ends? Maybe that's our retirement plan. Maybe. Like, in Hank can't retire, but maybe he can become a chaplain. I can't retire, but maybe I can become a tomato slide enthusiast.
Doing quality control on fungicides.
Now, that sounds important. I don't know what any of those words mean, but it sounds critical.
Yeah, no, it's definitely important.
I've got another question. It's from Devin and Joyce. They say, "Dear John and Hank, given that there are 96 million pounds of mosquitoes in the world, how big would all of them be if you put them together? Like in one giant blob, how many Olympic-sized swimming pools would they fit? Thank you for your time, Devin and Joyce." Devin and Joyce, you've made a classic miscalculation. Do you agree, Hank?
I think that there are a number of different variables we need to consider. Continue.
I think that if you work hard enough, Devin and Joyce, and if you believe in yourself, and if you have the right tools, you can get that ball of 96 million pounds of mosquitoes into an infinitely dense state that forms a single particle of unfathomably dense matter that then explodes into a new universe of mosquitoes. That's what I think.
You know, that is one of the guesses.
Just did an actual spit take. I went to have a sip of LaCroix. And I... All the astrophysicists say we can't figure out how the universe started, but... Over on Dear Hank and John, somebody just did.
Suck and it was John.
Physicists.
Yeah, there's. I mean, it's pure guess. The idea being that, I mean, if you want Mysterium Tremendum, the real place to look for it is the constants. There are a number of constants that seem to be constant across the whole universe. That if they weren't, matter would just fly apart and not do all the stuff that matter does, like stick into stars and. It might not even exist, or atoms couldn't exist. They would just be like, there would be protons and neutrons and electrons and quarks and stuff, but they wouldn't be sticking together. And the idea is that, like, all this stuff seems very precisely tuned for something, and physicists...
Wait, what do you mean?
I know, this is like where it gets
it
a little
seems
bit like...
precisely tuned?
Yeah, so...
Bro, you are on a journey of
I
meaning.
I know... This, so like they don't, we, nobody likes to talk about this in like the SciComm community because it's very easy to get very sort of woo-woo about it. The numbers seem to be.
It seems hard not to get woo-woo about it based on what you just said.
The numbers seem to be the way that they should be if you want a universe that has certain things in it. And that's not like humans or life. So the existence of humans and life seems to be potentially a, you know, inevitable consequence of the everything being set up a certain way, that like sometimes you can get these sort of stable, far from equilibrium things, far from chemical equilibrium things that is like life. And there's no reason why that couldn't exist in a universe like ours. But the thing that it does seem to be well set up for is to create stars and black holes. So that makes some people who are a little bit on the edge of the astrophysics community, a little more woo-woo, say, what if there's some sort of like multiverse situation where lots of different like multiverse, like universes are set up, but then the ones that there's sort of like an evolution of universes with a natural selective pressure toward universes that can create more black holes. Because if you create a black hole, then you create a universe at the same time.
What? I'm out. That sounds, I'll tell you, I got to get Katie Mack on the phone. Check that one out.
Yeah, Katie Mack is going to be the exact person who would be like, Hank should not be talking right now.
I kind of agree, actually.
It is one of those fun science conversations that's more a fun science but there's no like way to do tests on things like this or confirm them. But that's why I said that and you did a spit take about it. Because that is one of the guesses, and it's pure guess. It's not a hypothesis or anything. But yeah, so the mosquito black hole would be infinitely small. So that's a great point, John, that you could take 96 million pounds of mosquitoes and make them into a singularity. But if you wanted to leave them at standard temperature and pressure of the Earth.
Which I don't.
Yeah, which is understandable. They are, you know, at least certain species, very bad for humans. Dubokie has done a lot of work.
All right, give it to
try
me.
And figure out how big a mosquito is. So this is the tricky part, is figuring out how big a single mosquito is, because they're different sizes.
Different sizes, yeah.
So and also the different sizes at different times. Like if they've just fed, they're bigger than if they haven't been fed. But she has come to a broad conclusion of around 2.7 microliters, because that's close enough, basically. And given that, the total, if you had at peak mosquito season, you could got all those mosquitoes together, it would be about 110 million liters, which is not that much. It's 44 Olympic-sized swimming pools full of mosquitoes.
You just had a great idea for a horror movie.
It's called 44 Olympic-sized swimming pools of mosquitoes.
It's so concise, right? Like it's you know just what it is.
Yeah, like Sharknado.
It's like Sharknado. Yeah. It's not as short as Sharknado. I think you could just call it 44. I think you do have to say Olympic-sized swimming pools. I think you can say 44 Olympic-sized swimming pools of mosquitoes.
Yeah. Scientists were so busy wondering whether they could that they couldn't figure out that they didn't ask whether they should.
It's a great tagline.
Why did you do it? I don't know. We were wondering if we could.
We ended malaria.
But it must have been really hard though. Yeah, it was a lot of work.
We ended malaria, except for the tributes. And then the movie's about the tributes. Of course it is.
Yeah.
Every couple years we need to send people down into those swimming pools to find out if those mosquitoes are still making the malaria.
Yeah.
And who should be chosen but an uncommonly attractive heterosexual couple who aren't a couple yet?
Sure.
How
are
they ever
going
to survive swimming through 44 Olympic-sized swimming pools of mosquitoes?
Only
time will tell.
So now we've moved out of Jurassic Park and we're doing the Hunger Games.
I was thinking more like Speed. You know, that Keanu Reeves, Sandra Bullock film, you know?
Yeah.
Where they're brought together by trauma, but they know they're brought together by trauma. And so they're like, is this really going to last?
They're like, we're going to make it last.
And then in the 44th swimming pool, one of them has to make a major sacrifice for the other, a loss of something, eyeglasses, a finger, I don't know. And that's when they realize, like, it was all worth it. And then you flash forward, and it's 5 years later, and their swelling from the mosquito bites is finally down, and they've got a nice little house in the suburbs and a two-year-old, and you're just seeing a nice, pleasant breakfast scene. And then what's over there in the corner? Oh, it's the finger. It's the finger that reminds them of their love.
I thought it was going to be one last mosquito.
No, that's the horror movie ending. That's not the Speed ending. That's the Smile ending, Hank. No. God, I shouldn't have said any of that, because we're on strike and I should not be giving out ideas to Hollywood like that.
This next question comes from Gabor, who asks, if Neanderthals were still around today, would we be able to communicate with them either verbally or by some other means? Not Jean-Jacques Gabor, just Gabor.
By some active. Other memes, yeah. You can communicate with anything with memes.
Yeah.
Even a 7-year-old.
I mean, it's like their primary way, I've heard.
Could Neanderthals hang out with us? I mean, like...
Well, of course we don't know. Because we can't... We don't have them to ask, but...
No, we dealt with that problem.
There is a lot of actual active research going on to try and figure this out. So they have done some work with the ears to see what frequencies the species can hear best in, which is interesting. Oh. And they've studied the range of frequencies that ears are most sensitive to. And they have found that both Neanderthals and humans have that overlap, where Neanderthals could definitely hear in the range of human speech. That's not a surprise. Obviously, like, dogs can too, because they can hear us talking. But they seem to be quite capable of hearing humans, and possibly even more capable of hearing human speech compared to other human ancestors.
Whoa.
And so it seems like it wouldn't be surprising if Neanderthals talked. And if they did, then it wouldn't be surprising if we could figure out some way of talking to each other. Now, it is really hard to speak to people who speak different languages. It's hard to learn different languages, and that's probably going to be even harder. It is definitely harder if those languages don't share any roots. If they didn't sort of come from the same place. And obviously, yeah, there are forms of language on Earth right now that we cannot decipher. And it may be that they just don't contain a lot of information, or it may be a problem of just how differently the information is encoded.
Are we talking about like dolphins?
Talking about dolphins and dolphin like stuff.
Sure.
But my guess, if I'm just going to like confidently state things about
science. And that's
what
you're doing. That's what you've been doing the whole time.
That's this episode of Dear Hank and John.
Yeah.
I think we could talk.
I mean, I'll tell you what, we could certainly scootily poop.
Yeah, which talking is not, has been proven over and over again, that you don't have to speak the same language to make a baby, but.
You don't, but it helps, I think.
Yeah.
I think. I agree with you based on my also unscientific opinion. There is a great YouTube channel about prehistory and non-Homo sapiens hominids called, the person who makes it is called Stefan Milo. It's one of my favorite YouTube channels. It's like 45-minute documentaries that are like, how do we know what kind of tools Homo erectus used? And then you're like, wow, these people are amazing. Humans are amazing. We can figure out so much. Wow. Uh-huh. So I would recommend watching that instead of listening to Hank and I hypothesize.
Absolutely.
Which reminds me, though, that today's podcast is in fact brought to you by Hank's hypotheses. Hank's hypotheses. There is a God.
That's definitely
who made
not
the universe.
What? No, wow.
And who taught Neanderthals to talk.
Yep, that's right. That's what I said.
He is a man with a beard who sends you to heaven if you're cool.
Yeah,
or did we get too far into my faith tradition?
Yeah. It's like VidCon.
Is it like VidCon?
Well, you got to get that invite.
Oh, it's like, yes, there's multiple, just like VidCon, there's multiple kinds of badges.
Yeah.
You can go to different rooms with different badges.
Right. And you get a plus one if you get in too. So think about who you're going to give that to. This podcast is also brought to you by Vin Diesel's net worth. Vin Diesel's net worth.
What a bad system that would be.
I bet it's constantly fluctuating.
Imagine if, like, you get to the gates of heaven and St. Peter is like, ah, oh, great job, man. We dinged you for all the LaCroix you drank. You really created a lot of unnecessary aluminum.
A lot of single use.
But, we mulled it over and, your heart was in the right place. And you got that contamination OCD. So we kind of get it. Anyway, we decided to let you in. You get a plus one. You want your wife or your daughter?
Or your son?
No, he's getting in. I'm not worried about him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Those are the two troublemakers there. Great. Yeah.
Oh, today's podcast, of course, is also brought to you by, I don't remember anything that happened before this moment. Like, I am living in the present. Huh?
I always put notes at the top for you.
Hank, I'm living in the present in a way that nobody has ever lived in the present before. It's a radical, radical presence. Today's podcast is also brought to you, of course, by the Mosquito Black Hole. The Mosquito Black Hole, it is a pathway to a new universe that is composed entirely of former mosquitoes.
And this podcast is also brought to you by My Journey of Meaning.
Oh, man.
It's just looking out for that Mysterium Tremendum. Seeing where it's at.
If you could have seen Hank 20 years ago, and then you see Hank almost acknowledging that he's experienced the Mysterium Tremendum, I can't even tell you. It's the biggest turn.
Nah, I was all over the place, man. I've always been all over the place.
I guess that's true. I've only, I'm a religious person, but then when I like talk about my religious beliefs with religious people, a lot of them think that I'm, a demon, sent to distract the people from the really important stuff, which is sexual ethics and nation worshiping.
Uh-huh.
But I've only fallen on my knees in prayer, like in like tearful prayer in my whole life twice. And once was at the world's largest wooden crucifix, which is surprisingly large. And that one was completely out of nowhere. I'd never had a theistic thought in my life. And then I saw the world's largest wooden crucifix and just something came over me. So whoever designed that one did a good job.
Yeah.
And then the other was on Thursday.
I thought you were going to say some like that.
It's true.
I did it once at summer camp. I was looked up at I was like under the stars. I didn't fall down in prayer, but I did sort of like, and then once it happened with a donut.
Yeah. Oh God, of course.
Yeah.
Some people say it's the Lord's greatest creation.
Tauruses are surprisingly common.
I mean, he made us so that we could make donuts.
And we're kind of donuts.
Oh my God, Hank, we are donuts.
Yeah.
We're donuts with limbs.
We've also got a Project for Awesome message, John. It's from Alex, for Kathleen. Alex says, surprise, while I've got the voice of John and or Hank, it's Hank, to be sappy on my behalf, I'm so grateful to have a brilliant, caring, and all-around wonderful person for a sister. You inspire me, and I love you. Don't forget, you are awesome, and I'm always in your corner. Thanks for being in mine. Okay, I've said too many nice things now. Next time, maybe I'll throw something at you when I see you next, hopefully soon. Lovely. I'll make sure to throw something at John as well.
It was lovely until the end.
I like that.
No, it was. It was very sweet. Very sweet. Thank you for donating to the Project for Awesome. So we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. But one thing you don't want to compromise on is your health. When it comes to your health, there should be no compromising. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines or their family group chat or the crossword puzzle just because they're available right now or take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. So go to ZocDoc.com/DearHank and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/DearHank. ZocDoc.com/DearHank. One thing about me is that I'm mortal, like I'm an organism, which is weird on its own. Like I'm a collection of literal atoms that decided to hang out together for a while and which will eventually be unable to hang out together any longer. And then I will, this is the weirdest part, cease to be. And there's nothing that can be done about that because, like, planets and stars also cease to be. It's a real conundrum, and I'm not going to find my way through it in this advertisement. But we can make life less terrible for those who survive us, and that's why there's life insurance. I have life insurance because the people who are counting on me will be supported after my atoms can no longer hold it together, and Policy Genius is here to make life insurance easier. Policy Genius isn't an insurance company, it's a marketplace where buying insurance is straightforward and affordable. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams, so check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Hank, before we get to the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, and there is a lot of news from AFC Wimbledon, so we do have to devote some time to it. I apologize.
Okay.
We have a really important question from Jess, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, people always say it's 5 o'clock somewhere to justify their drinking in the morning. Where is it 5 o'clock right now? Pumpkins and penguins, Jess." Well, it's only exactly 5 o'clock somewhere at certain times, Jess, but as it happens, that time is approaching.
It is for us. Wow.
It's 2:59 p.m. right now. So 1 minute from now, it will be 5 o'clock somewhere. But where, Hank? Where will it be 5 p.m.? I'm concerned it will only be 5 p.m. in non-human locations.
It is currently, and this is a little bit wild, John.
Okay, I'm ready.
5 o'clock nowhere.
No.
Yeah. So in Montevideo, it's 4 p.m. Sao Paulo, Halifax, Rio de Janeiro, all 4 p.m. right now. In Accra, it's 7 p.m. And in St. John's, it's 4:30.
4:30, St. John's.
Somebody really wanted to make things just troubling. But yeah, according to this
no,
website,
no,
anyway,
no. You're way off.
It's 5
you're
o'clock
off.
Nowhere. There's a big
way
gap
off.
Between 4 and 7. Like, there's just
okay.
Nobody there.
No, you are mistaken, respectfully.
Okay. I got to hit the extended list.
It is 5 o'clock. So we are in.
I got it.
So it's where it's -3, right? If we're -5, I'm in -5. We got to look where it's -3.
It's currently, okay. So it's 5 o'clock in what I believe is the edge of Alaska.
No.
No?
What are you talking about?
That's what it says on this website.
Dude, bro.
What?
That would be 5 a.m.
No, it says 5 p.m.
Okay. It's later in Europe. You know, it's later in Europe than it is in America
this
right
is
now.
Greenland. That's Greenland. The other
That's
edge. The other
Greenland.
Side. It's Greenland.
Were you looking at Greenland and thinking it was Alaska?
No, I was looking at the names of the towns, which are all, they all look like they're Inuit to me.
Wildly. There, it is 5 o'clock right now, 5 p.m., for uh-huh. less than 10,000 people. But it is 5 o'clock for oh, wow. some people. Because actually, the most like populated parts of Greenland, it's 6 o'clock.
There's a pretty narrow slice that it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
But there is a tiny, tiny slice of sort of inland Greenland and
yeah.
southern Greenland. Where it is currently 5 o'clock. And then there is also, oh no, it's 7 o'clock there. Oh no, this is a catastrophe.
I'm telling you, John, it's not 5 o'clock for many places.
Well, they've just made a weird choice. That's
well,
on them, really.
That's a very
it's
time zone
o'clock,
type thing.
It's 5 o'clock in a bunch of Greenland. All of most of Western Greenland, it's 5 o'clock. Most of Western Greenland.
Yeah.
Even like far West Greenland, like Quanah.
Oh, they got a really weird situation there in Greenland.
It's
5 o'clock. They got a couple extra time zones for no good reason.
Yeah. And it's 7 o'clock in far Eastern Greenland, which is not the decision I would have made. But again, that's for the Greenland people to figure out. But in a bunch of, in Nuuk, in Southern Greenland, mm-hmm. 5 o'clock. It's 5:03 now because it took us so long to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah, we really almost did it, but then we didn't.
No, we were so confident, and then we thought it was 5 o'clock nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an hour? I mean, I think of all the hours, this is the hour where it is 5 o'clock for the fewest people. Right now.
I think we may have gotten the one. Man, I gotta tell you, you look at the time zones of the world map and you do think they're not trying very hard to make this make sense.
No, there's not a real meaningful commitment. Indianapolis is a great example of this. Indianapolis is longitudinally identical to Birmingham, Alabama, and
yeah.
Birmingham is in the central time zone and Indianapolis is in the eastern time zone.
Well, I mean, the best part is the place in China where you grow across a border and you lose 8 hours.
Yeah. Well, that's all part of it. I mean, you know, that's my biggest criticism of the Chinese government, Hank. I don't know about you, but I think other than that, they're doing everything right. Hank.
Yeah. John.
I'm so glad we got to do this together and learn that we're currently experiencing one of the lowest volumes 5 o'clock anywhere that you can possibly experience. But I need to get to the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon.
Okay.
AFC Wimbledon continued their astonishing losing streak, losing today on the last day of the season to Grimsby Town. A great summary of how it went for us, Grimsby. We did not win any, I don't think, of our last 15 games. We finished only a few points clear of relegation. And that relegation is not the funny, it's no big deal one, but like the catastrophic one where you're no longer a professional football team and you have to go down to the National League and there's only two promotion spots and it's hell on earth. The thing that, that Wrexham just suffered through. So not a good season, I think it's safe to say. Like getting relegated for finishing 21st in League One and then finishing 21st in League Two is not a good season. Hard stop. But, but.
You're staying up.
We're staying up, and there was one highlight to our season. Aside from Ali Alhamidi emerging as probably the greatest striker in the history of football, there was one glorious day in our season. Now, not every Wimbledon fan will agree with me, so I'll just tell you that it was a glorious day in my season. You know what that was, Hank? It was yesterday. It was yesterday morning. Had a bit of a rough weekend. But then the franchise currently plying its trade in Milton Keynes, Hank, they had to win a game.
Oh, yeah.
To stay in League One.
Mm-hmm.
They had to, all they had to do was win a game. And they were playing a team, Burton Albion, that had absolutely nothing to play for. Win, lose, or draw, nothing is going to change for Burton Albion. They're in 17th place, and they're going to be in 17th place. And I figured a totally unmotivated Burton Albion versus a franchise currently plying its trade in Milton Keynes that knows that a win secures another season in League One. It's not even going to be close, but my God, it was close. Burton Albion parked the bus, Hank. They defended 11 players behind the ball as if their lives depended on relegating Milton Keynes. You would have thought that all 11 of these players had been in the meetings with the English FA where the English FA said that the Wimbledon Football Club should move to Milton Keynes because a club in Wimbledon is not in the wider interest of football. That's what you would have thought. You would have thought that we raised these kids in our academy the way they were throwing themselves at the ball. And then with 30 seconds left in the game, Milton Keynes had a corner, and there was the most glorious series of goal line clearances. I mean, one guy, like, got hit in the face and then, like, didn't go down so that he could block another shot. It was incredible. It was beautiful. I will forever be a Burton Albion fan. I will never forget this extraordinary act of generosity, sending Milton Keynes down to League Two, same league that we're in. We have to play them twice next season, which isn't fun, but it might be fun if we beat them. And I just, you can't want other people to suffer. Right? Like that's a poison pill in a human life. But after a season, okay, where we got relegated and we were supposed to be pretty good, and after that season where we won only 11 out of 46 games, where we ended with a goal difference of negative 12, I needed a jolt of joy. And hearing the Milton Keynes fans yell at their owner, Pete Winkleman, proper Bond villain, the person who relocated the club from Wimbledon to Milton Keynes, hearing them yell at Pete Winkleman and tell him that he was an idiot, I was like, oh, finally, we agree on something. So yeah, you can't revel in other people's pain, except occasionally.
Yeah. It does seem like you were doing that, and it also seems like maybe that person shouldn't have done that thing. So that's really what it's about. Don't make the mistake.
You don't suffer the consequences. As Alice says every day in her karate classes, the sensei says, actions have, and then Alice says, consequences, ma'am.
Wow, cute.
Actions have consequences, Pete Winkleman. What's the news from Mars?
In the news from Mars, Fox, the television station, announced that they're going to be sending celebrity, in quotation marks, contestants to a
I'm a celebrity,
Mars,
get me off of Mars?
To a fake Mars in a show called Stars on Mars.
Stars on Mars.
They're going to participate
Stars on
in
Mars.
Various competitions, and they're going to vote each
Mars.
Other off of fake Mars.
voting each other off of fake Mars, stars on Mars.
Stars on Mars. People who are going to be on Mars include Tallulah Willis, daughter of Bruce and Demi Moore.
Oh, Tallulah Willis, yes.
Ronda Rousey, the professional fighter.
Yes, of course.
Adam Rippon, the Olympic figure skater.
Okay.
Lance Armstrong, the bicyclist.
No.
Yeah.
No. Uh-huh. Why?
I don't know, John. He's literally the leading guy. He's like the most famous person on the list. William Shatner will play the role of Mission Control. Not clear why they've picked these people. There are some NFL players.
Oh, okay. It's not just the four of them.
No.
There's some former NFL players.
A bunch of people I've never heard of.
I'll just tell you, I can't believe they didn't ask you.
You know, if they did, they probably didn't get me.
I'm just saying, like, it speaks to me that something's fundamentally wrong with the show, that they didn't ask the world's most famous Mars enthusiast.
Yeah.
But I wish them all the luck in that really high quality television show they're making.
Yeah. So it's going to make doing the news from Mars much easier, because it's going to be the news from Stars on Mars.
Stars on Mars is such a good
title. It premieres June 5th.
Great.
Probably on some streaming service that I don't have.
Well, Hank, I look forward to Stars on Mars. And I don't know that forward is the right word. I look in expectation
toward
Stars on Mars. And I'm very grateful to you for podding with me. Thanks to everybody for listening. If you want to email us your questions, please do so at hankandjohn@gmail.com.
This podcast is edited by Joseph Tunamedish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Brooke Shotwell. Our editorial assistant is Dapoki Trakravarti. The music you're hearing now at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.